Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Big deal or no big deal that Tom Brady was up in the box with a headset on Monday night? Jory Epstein has thoughts on that. Plus, is the tush push one step closer to getting banned next spring? Steve Smith Sr. joins the show. Inside coverage next. All right, let's do a show. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. If you're listening in podcast form, we thank you for liking, subscribing, and sharing, and hopefully enjoying this show. If you are watching on YouTube, on the Yahoo app, on the brand new YahooSports.tv, we appreciate you as well. Monday through Thursday, we're here with the how and the why of everything around the National Football League. Coming up shortly, what does Steve Smith Sr. think about the Bengals' chances of making it to December with Jake Browning still in the playoff conversation for potentially Joe Burrow to return and save them in January? And what does he think about that whole Tom Brady wearing a headset thing, which is kind of a thing? The how and the why is not just me. No, it is all the great Yahoo NFL reporters, including the great Jory Epstein on the other side of your screen, if you are watching us in video form. Hi, Jory. How are you?
Hi, Andrew. I'm doing well. Week 3 is upon us. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm doing fantastically well. I think I say this every year. I can't believe it's insert week here. I can't believe it's week 3, which really, in the grand scheme of things, it's only like 10 days after week 1 kicked, where we said, oh my God, the season is here. And then bam. It goes like that. The NFL is a freight train rolling down the tracks, as you well know. And it's, you look up and you're like, well, wait, how are we at Thanksgiving? How are we at Christmas? And I feel like that feeling has already kind of set in, even though those holidays are still months away.
There's that. And then there's also a part of me that's like, wait, we only have 2 games of sample size. How are we supposed to know what's going to be this season? And I mean, that's part of it. But I go back and forth between feeling like it's unstoppable and having not that much patience for trying to actually understand how good teams are in 2025.
Yeah. And especially considering week 1 is a liar, as some people like to say. I had this conversation with a coach last week, you know, going into this game, you know, what do you make of the team you're playing? If, quote unquote, week 1 is a liar, like, can you really take much from the week 1 film? You have to consider the opponent, how much of that was game plan specific for the opponent that team was playing that week. How much do you really know? Now we have 2 weeks, but to your point, like, what is 2 weeks in the grand scheme of things? Some teams had guys available week 1 that they didn't have available week 2, and vice versa. You're kind of trying to dip your toe in the water and make sense of what we have.
Right. And I also think it's okay. Who did you go against in those 2 weeks? Like Russell Wilson, I'm pro him being the guy right now, not Jackson Dart. But how much of that is going to look different if they go against the Kansas City Chiefs, who are less likely to allow big plays than the Dallas Cowboys, and vice versa? And so I think so much of this is you can only play who's in front of you, who's across the field. Right. But I'd love to get a sense of which of these things are actually real as the season continues.
Which is a great transition to the story, not the outcomes of the games last night. By the way, the Buccaneers with again, another 2-minute drive, and they win. They go to 2-0. The Texans are 0-2. They beat Houston in Houston, or the late game in Vegas, where the Chargers are 2-0 and the Raiders are 1-1. We can break down those games in a little bit. But the story of the evening, and I know you know this, even I'm assuming late at night on the East Coast where you were watching, everyone's phones in the NFL blew up collectively when during the first quarter of the late game, there's the video of Tom Brady up in the press box. Peter Schrager, tip of the cap to Peter, who had the report down to the sideline, said that Tom Brady, minority owner of the Raiders and analyst on the Fox number 1 crew, speaks to offensive coordinator Chip Kelly 2 to 3 times a week, and here he is on headset. He is up there coaching, in essence. Now, how much communication during the game, I don't know, but he is up there. My phone blew up. I have no doubt that your phone blew up because of what appears to be, in many people's eyes, an inherent conflict of interest. So here's the statement from the league today from Brian McCarthy, the official league spokesman. And he reiterated, there are no policies that prohibit an owner from sitting in the coach's booth or wearing a headset during a game. Brady was sitting in the booth in his capacity as a limited partner. All personnel sitting in the booth must abide by policies that prohibit the use of electronic devices, so on and so forth. And you have this tweet as well. You have the comment from Brian McCarthy. Tom continues, and here's what people need to realize, because there's a lot of misinformation. Tom continues to be prohibited from going to the team facility for practices or production meetings. He may attend production meetings remotely, but may not attend in person. He may also conduct an interview off-site, which he has done before, for example, during the Super Bowl. But he's not going to practice. He's not going to anything else. It is amazing how, Jory, it is split right down the middle from the people that I talk to. There are people that think this is the biggest scandal of all time, and it's the massive conflict of interest, and why would anybody talk to Tom Brady? And then there are people, and I'm talking coaches as well, people in the league in senior positions who just go, like, who cares? So don't tell them anything. Like, what's actually the big deal? I know you're writing about this week. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot. And as you mentioned, this is the type of thing that there's not one united, resounding opinion. So I wanted to ask a lot of people because I didn't want to just ask a source or two and be like, this is what the league thinks. I heard back from 9 different sources between coaches and executives, NFC, AFC. I think they were from 8 different teams. And of them, I ended up sorting them into 3 categories. I would say that let's say 2 of them believe that there's no concern with Tom Brady both being a limited team owner for the Raiders in the capacities that we saw him in Monday night and also being a national broadcaster meeting virtually with teams in production meetings. 2 of them thought, okay, there's not really a concern, but the optics look bad when he's on the headset for one team and he's going to be asking our team or another team, which, by the way, I did go through and check. 6 teams on the Raiders' schedule, and that's 7 games if you count the Chiefs twice, are on the Raiders' schedule. So when Tom Brady was at this game, he was getting ready for the Bears-Cowboys game this week. Well, who do the Raiders play the next week? The Bears. Who do they play later in the season? The Cowboys. This past week, Chiefs-Eagles, one day before, he's in the coach's booth. He is broadcasting that game. He had production meetings virtually with those teams. Well, he's going to play both of them later this season. Anyway, back to it. So I had 2 people who believed that this was not a concern. 2 people who believed that this was a perception concern. It was bad optics, but not actually going to impact the competitive edge. And then 5 of the 9, so the overwhelming majority, did believe there was a real competitive concern. And they were actually split on what the issue was. Some of them said, he's on the dang headset. They didn't quite say it that way. And you think that we're supposed to pretend he's not that involved in the Raiders? Others felt that they weren't actually that concerned about Brady being in the coach's booth or having access to the headset, because how much can you really make those adjustments in the middle of the game when you're there? But Peter Schrager's report that he's meeting with Chip Kelly 2 to 3 times a week, going over film, going over game plans, that's actually what concerns some people I talk to more, because that's when you would have the time to input those wrinkles. And as everyone said, Brady's a really competitive guy. Why would he not use this to his advantage to help the Raiders when you look at the course of his career and what he was doing to get an advantage? And I'll add, if Brady is doing that, I actually don't fault him for it. The NFL has decided, in my opinion, that they value Brady being a part of them so greatly that they are willing to create a separate set of rules for Tom Brady. It is within Tom Brady's purview to maximize both sets of those rules. So to me, this is not, is Tom Brady doing something unethical? This is, are the league or stakeholders and the broadcasters and everyone else setting him up to be able to fairly be both team owner and national broadcaster?
There are a lot of layers here. And again, there are people, I got a text from a member of the media last night saying, this is so stupid. You guys just hate Tom Brady. And I'm like, really? Like, I mean, come on. It that is not in any way the case. For the record, like, there are people, I don't say that are in a bad spot. There are plenty of people in the national media that also moonlight in their free time doing preseason broadcasts for the teams. All 32 teams produce their own local home television broadcast. So plenty of people moonlight. There's a lot of gray area here. It's not as if Tom Brady is the only guy in some kind of questionable position. But when you see him on headset, you're like, wait a minute. So let me get this straight. He gets the Bears this week. And then the Bears next week play the Raiders. Brady's doing Bears Lions on Fox. So Ben Johnson, and he and Brady are close. Ben Johnson's going to do a Zoom with him. Dennis Allen coordinators do Zooms as well. So Dennis Allen will do a Zoom with him, for example. Caleb will do a Zoom with Tom Brady. And then the next week, the Bears, after they play the Lions, will play Brady's Raiders. Now, he's not going to be on headset for that game. He's going to be working. I don't think that's a Monday night game. Let's assume it isn't. Like, that seems off. I don't think those optics are right. At the same time, I also don't question Brady's integrity. And at the same time, I also think Ben Johnson is smart enough to not tell him anything that truly would be used against the Bears to truly make it a disadvantage. But to pull back the curtain a little bit on these production meetings, look, there are coaches that tell you everything. There are coaches that tell you nothing. A lot of it depends on the level of personal relationship and how much you've worked or interviewed or you know this coach or this staff. There are some coaches that just like to gossip. There are some that are open books. There are some that want to come in and vent. A lot depends on, is that team winning? Is that team losing? Was it a good week? Was it a bad week? But I would have to think that knowing the paranoia, and Jory, I know you've seen this, obviously, the paranoia that a lot of coaches, a lot of buildings have, that there are plenty of teams that are like, I ain't telling them anything. I'm giving them cliche answers and I don't like it.
Yeah, I think that if Bill Belichick was still coaching the Patriots, he would have a lot of thoughts and a lot of reason to create a stink about this. I think that the current coaches and general managers are a little bit different, not just because they haven't had the level of success that Bill Belichick had, but I think that, as you said, you could tell him whatever you wanted. There are also some coaches and GMs in this league who just simply believe, I mean, I didn't talk to Les Snead for the story, but like Les Snead is an example of a person who's like, what is someone going to do with the access? He gave Jordan Rodriguez fantastic access that she wrote fantastic stories with about their scouting process because Les said, I don't think this is hurting us. I just think this is good for the game. And I would argue that a lot of people in the league believe they can learn more from Tom Brady that will help them than Tom Brady can learn that will help his Raiders. And so I think as long as that is still the way that the scales are tipping, that is what we're going to see. I mean, you're going to tell me Caleb Williams doesn't want to talk to Tom Brady because of this? No, he would love to hear what Tom Brady had to say. He'd love to get advice from Tom Brady. I'll also add that the Raiders might be better this year. As we said, it's two games. As long as the Raiders aren't really threatening the teams that are most likely to do something about this, that is going to keep some of this at bay. Also, the fact that the Raiders play on Sundays for until November, that's going to keep some at bay. And then you have a Thursday game versus Denver and a Monday game versus Dallas. But you think that Jerry Jones doesn't want Tom Brady at his game? I can assure you, when someone asks me, why do you think that Jerry Jones isn't going after this? I'm like, Jerry is all about eyeballs on the game, getting them money. That is what he wants. And then I asked another team who, let's just say there are members of their front office that have a reputation of going after people who do things that they think can be punished for. And they're like, I think so-and-so just respects Tom Brady too much to do something. So I don't know that I totally agree with you, Andrew, on let's believe in Tom Brady's integrity that he wouldn't help his team, because I just don't think that's how he's competitively wired. And that's okay. He's been given special rules. But I do think that Tom is also going to be forthcoming in helping the teams, and that is ultimately what they're going to value more.
Yeah, let me clarify. When I say I trust his integrity, I do trust his integrity. Now, that doesn't mean he won't try to help the Raiders. Like, there's a needle to thread there. What's interesting to me, and I hadn't even made the Belichick connection, but let's go do that. Brady came from 20 years with Bill Belichick, and you talk to any former Patriot, and obviously I don't even need to go through Spygate again and everything that they were accused of, some of it real, some of it imagined over the years. But for 20 years, Bill Belichick operated where any single way we will get an edge, we will do it. Right. And it led to paranoia. When teams would go in and visit the Patriots, they'd accuse them of, hey, my headsets are going out. Some of that might be real. Some of that might be imagined. They would bring paper shredders. Most teams bring paper shredders on the road. But if you left something in the trash can, everyone believed it was going to be used against you. Right. You need to clean off those whiteboards. You need to bring your own Wi-Fi system. There was a level of paranoia when you went on the road to play the Patriots. So that is how Tom Brady learned the NFL. Again, I'm not questioning the man's personal integrity, but he was raised in an NFL system in which you did any and everything imaginable that you could to try to get an advantage.
And if he goes back and tells the Raiders something about Caleb Williams that he learned in a production meeting, he's not breaking the rules he's currently subject to. He's breaking them if he criticizes the officials, but not if he tells the Raiders information. That is what is a little bit wild to me. Now,
so it's really,
understand
do we like,
it's probably
I mean,
not
do we think the rules are fair? Do we think the rules are fair? Do we think that this, as you said, it seems as if the league is valuing Brady's participation more than it is the overall appearance of integrity?
To me, I think there are two things that will tell you whether or not these are fair. The first is that when the league put out its statement, it didn't say any national broadcaster can sit in a coach's booth. It said any team owner can sit in a coach's booth. No one was debating whether the owner should be in the coach's booth. They were debating whether the guy in national broadcast meetings with other teams should be in the coach's booth. So I think that the league trying to shift attention away from that, to me, shows me how they feel about whether that part is okay. The other thing I'll say is when you look at what Pete Carroll said, because as I mentioned, there are people in the league who don't really care if Brady's on the headset, but they do care if Brady is meeting with Chip Kelly 2 to 3 times a week after having met with their own team in production. Mm-hmm. Well, when Pete Carroll was asked about that, he said, and I'm going to read this verbatim, yeah, that's not accurate. That's not accurate. That's not accurate. We have conversations. Then he went into the conversations. Anyone who has to tell you 3 times that something's not accurate, you should question whether or not it's accurate.
Later this afternoon, or that was last night after the game, today on the podium, Carroll said, Tom isn't game planning with us. That was his, I'm paraphrasing. That's basically the exact quote. Tom isn't game planning with us. And again, I guess it's semantics. There's a difference between to Chip Kelly multiple times during the week and actually sitting there and putting together the game plan and being there for a Wednesday install. So, yeah. Look, again, like behind the curtain here, when a broadcast crew rolls into town, right, especially the A-team here, you generally go to practice on Friday. That isn't the case with this crew, because Tom is not allowed to do that. So if you're like listening to Al Michaels or Kirk Herbstreit, a little bit different on TNF, but maybe the Sunday night crew, there's an example. You're listening to Tirico and Collinsworth on Sunday night. They may say, or you might hear Collinsworth say, if and when a trick play is run, we saw that in practice on Friday, right? Because they're afforded that opportunity. You can watch practice. You can see us work on these things. You can see that while we list a player as questionable, he's not out there on Friday. Wink, wink, we know he's not playing, but we're going to make it 50-50. That crew will get that heads up because they see that he's not out there on Friday. Those kinds of things. Is that information going to help the Raiders the next week? I don't know, but that's information that is right now Brady doesn't get to see, because they already have some guardrails here. I think the headset was something that your phone blew up too, right? Wasn't just mine.
I would say my phone blew up and I was blowing up other people's phones. And as you mentioned, yeah, it was pretty late by the time this was happening on the East Coast. I mean, 10:30, 11 o'clock. And I was getting text back from GM and I'm like, oh, it's close to midnight. Maybe I should have waited till tomorrow to send that. But that's kind of the frenzy we were all in. And it was clear that a lot of people were still awake watching this. And the more you talk about this, Andrew, the more I would say it might not be the teams playing the Raiders that have the most to lose from this revelation. It might be the Fox broadcast, because teams might say, oh, well, now that I realize how involved he is in a different way, I'll just be really vanilla. I mean, with all due respect to Brian Daboll, because he does this intentionally, he learned it from Bill Belichick. You could spend 30 minutes with Brian Daboll and learn nothing new about his team if that's what he wanted. You could also spend 30 and learn a lot, sure. But if he wants that, he could do that. Yeah. It's possible that we'll continue to see that. And I think that, in my opinion, it was evident last year that Tom Brady did not have the access that some of those guys had. Maybe that was also just him getting his broadcasting footing. But when you listen to what Greg Olson was describing in a broadcast compared to what Tom Brady was, there's a very different level of conversation. I would also say very different focus, in terms of Tom was often describing the quarterback play and more talking about what he was seeing than giving the color that he might have picked up in broadcast meetings. And I think that's a factor in why they loosened his restrictions, because the broadcast will be better if he does have this access. Absolutely. But you have to wonder how much these teams matter. And it might be more a matter of, are you playing the Raiders this year? And if not, who cares?
yeah, it's interesting, and it's something that's going to develop as we continue here. We'll talk to Steve Smith about it coming up in a couple of minutes. Let's do 2 minutes because, gosh, we're heavy. Andrew blows through stop signs. There's a new segment. 2 minutes real quick. In that Charger-Raider game, I mean, Geno throws a couple of picks, three picks actually, but give Jesse Minter's defense credit. He looked great last year. He looked great through two games here. They may not have the most talented defensive roster top to bottom, and Khalil Mack getting hurt last night certainly doesn't help. But Geno is seeing ghosts. You're able to run all these simulated pressures and drop and play zone, and it didn't work. And it didn't work, at least for the Raiders. And on the flip side, Justin Herbert's the real deal, the run of the football, though they didn't run it as much last night as I think most people assumed that they would. And the Chargers, even though some have been naysayers, myself right here, they look legit.
They do. And their defense was doing that despite the fact that Khalil Mack got injured. I'll also add that some of their young guys really seem to be coming up. There's a great clip of Justin Herbert's touchdown to Keenan Allen where rookie running back O'Marrion Hampton was in pass protection and just holding it for so long. And I think it's sort of like those moments that I'm like, that's Jim Harbaugh's impact, the way that the rookie running back is able to pick up that defender the way that he did. And I think when you look at that and you look at what this defense is doing, I don't think that the Chiefs are going to be a bad team this year. I think they're going to be better than their 0-2 record suggests. But I think that they faced a really good Chargers team in week one. And I'm excited to see the Chargers and Broncos this coming week because I do think we're going to learn a lot about that AFC West pecking order.
Absolutely. That is one of four games in the 4 o'clock window, 4 o'clock Eastern window. That game is at SoFi. The Raiders, meantime, as mentioned, the Raiders are in Washington to face likely Marcus Mariota or possibly Marcus Mariota and the Commanders. In the early game, Buccaneers are 2-0. Baker led them on another drive. Baker looks fantastic. Some people have him in the MVP conversation. You lose Kalijah Kansi, the defensive tackle, the kid out of Pitt, first-round pick a couple of years ago that cannot seemingly find a way to stay healthy, but the kid looks great when he is healthy. Emeka Abuka looks great. Another touchdown, 3 for the first-round pick this year out of Ohio State, and there are legitimate concerns now in Houston about already the play calling, the offensive line, C.J. Stroud's play through 2 weeks. It's a new offensive system with Nick Caley. It is not yet clicking. And they found a way to lose, and they are 0-2 in a division that many people thought was theirs, and a division that right now is a lot better with the Colts at 2-0 than I think anyone thought it would have been a month ago.
Yeah, it's funny because if you turned on this game with about a couple minutes to go, I think it was, I guess, 5.5 minutes, you say, Houston's actually taking this lead, and it kind of seems like it's been that way, not realizing that Tampa had been in the lead all along. And then all of a sudden, Tampa gets the ball back, and what do you know? It's like one punt return, one touchdown, and there you go. So I definitely think that there is I'm mixing this up. The Texans had the punt return, the touchdown, take this lead after not having held it, and then all of a sudden you see what the Bucs are doing. But I just think that you kind of have this feel with Baker Mayfield that they're never out of it, and it doesn't matter if someone comes and takes that lead towards the end. Baker Mayfield's going to find a way to get you back in it.
Buccaneers try to go to 3-0 this week. They get the Jets. That game is in Tampa, so good for them at home on a short week, whereas the Texans go to Jacksonville to play the fiery Liam Cohen Jaguars. Coming up next, speaking of fiery, on Inside Coverage, Steve Smith Sr. will join us for the how and why from his perspective through 2 weeks. That's Jory. I'm Andrew. Don't go anywhere. It's Inside Coverage on a Tuesday heading into week 3 here on Yahoo. This is a pleasure. I love working with this guy way back in the day. Lots of good road trips for Thursday night football, for inside training camp, fun on the desk in LA. Matter of fact, Steve Smith Sr. has a picture with Staples Center there hanging over the couch.
You see that, huh?
I see that.
You know, I always keep my LA roots with me.
No, it looks good, man. L.A. native. Yes, Steve Smith Sr. How are you, man? Good to see you.
Oh, appreciate it. Doing good. You know, it's Media Tuesday for me. So in my home studio that I just renovated, and it's coming along. Coming along.
Where you do the 89 show with our friend James Palmer? Yep. That's on Blue Wire now. Where you're doing, sir, a golf show, ironed out?
Yeah, man.
I had not picked up a club in 15 years. This summer, I decided to try to get back into it, take some lessons, and confirm that I'm still awful. Mm. So, yeah, I'm bad. One of these days I'll get out there and I'll get on your ironed out podcast.
Okay. We travel too, so we can come to you.
Good.
If there's grass, let us play.
Good. Come down here. Come back to the to LA. We'll play. All right. Let's talk about turf toe. You ever had it?
Yeah, I've had turf toe. It's pretty painful.
Did you ever have it where you needed surgery?
Nope.
Okay. Yeah. So Joe Burrow needs surgery. It's grade three. They say 3 months.
Yeah, it sounds like because of the ligament is torn, attaching. Yeah. So there's something in there that's a little bit more severe than usually. They take your toe, they dorsiflex it, tape it. So that minimizes, as you're running, that minimizes your ability to stretch and re-aggravate that tendon and all those nerves that are in your feet. Just let go, unfortunately, from UCLA, Deshaun Foster. He had turf toe like a maniac. And part of the problem with the turf toe is a lot of times that happens on artificial turf because of how much the ground doesn't give on artificial turf versus on a regular field. When you slide too much, what happens? You don't see black pebbles come up. What do you see? Indents in the grass, or the grass comes up under you. With turf, that doesn't happen. And so your body ends up taking all of the brunt of the forces versus it being distributed from your body and the grass artificial surface.
Yeah, sounds awful. And for anyone who's ever been down to the field and you see that ground up tire and you feel how, you know, the turf's got more give than it used to, but still, it's not
nice. The real thing.
It's
not the real thing. And you can't replace the real thing.
And now they got to replace Joe Burrow. They got Jake Browning. They say it's a 3-month injury, but really, let's cut the you know what. He comes back, Joe Burrow comes back, if the Bengals are in position.
Correct.
Right. To have him risk it and force. Yeah, and come back. Do you think Jake Browning keeps them in position?
That's a hard question because we're not really sure. We haven't had Jake Browning for an extended period of time before like this. This is pretty much, look, this is week two.
It's the whole season.
You got 15 weeks. You have 15 weeks. So September, so October, November, December. January, that's the last game of the season. Your quarterback now, Jake Browning, you have to believe that he can bring you there because you have Ja'Marr Chase, because you have T. Higgins. I would hope this now gives Zach Taylor the excuse to maybe lean on the run game a little bit more to take the pressure off your quarterback. And who's a backup? Brownie's, I play golf with him. He's Pac-12, so he's a kid or a guy that's very familiar with dealing with adversity. He understands his role, but now he's not playing sparingly. He is your quarterback for the remainder of the season until 2026, which is the first game in January / the playoffs.
Yeah, and look, in 2023, he played reasonably well down the stretch. I think you and I were working NFL Network Saturday game together on the desk, and he looked good, but that's an entirely different beast when you're just coming in and playing in December, as opposed to your point, starting in September and trying to navigate this team into the postseason. Hey, want to get your thoughts, Steve, on the Tom Brady thing. Watching Monday Night Football last night. So let's back up for a second. You do preseason games for the Panthers. I do games for the Browns. All of our colleagues at NFL Network, whether it's MJD or Daniel Jeremiah, or, I mean, there's a long list.
Mina Kimes does for the Rams. Exactly. Right? She's with ESPN. So a lot of different people.
So if you pull back the curtain, plenty of us in the national media space also have jobs for teams. So look, there's inherently a little bit of conflict there, but we navigate it. And a lot of that work is in the preseason, like with you, where it only really matters. I mean, let's cut the, you know what, so much, right? Mm-hmm. But this is different. For example, Brady is working the Bears game this week. Mm-hmm. And then next week, week four, the Bears play the Raiders. Mm. If you're Ben Johnson, how would you feel about that?
Look, I like Tom.
Same.
Respect the heck out of him.
Same.
But at the same time, he's in a unique position. And because he's in a unique position, right, it's rich folks' problems, right? You got to decide and figure out what you are comfortable with and not comfortable with. I remember when Greg Olsen, I wasn't on a team at the time, Greg Olsen was doing broadcasting, and I remember the New Orleans Saints, Sean Payton, who's extremely paranoid, did not want Greg Olsen in the building because he knew that they were playing them at another stage. I don't know if they played them already, but he knew they had to play them two more times or one more time. And having as much information that he had, meaning the opposing team or whoever's facility the broadcaster is in and affiliated with a team, it gives them a fair disadvantage because in these production meetings is where you get the real. You get to understand and figure out what a player, which player is happy, which player is unhappy, which player a coach likes, which player a team is moving on from, right? I've had a number of conversations. I remember I was at the Super Bowl and I was talking to a team and they asked me about a receiver. And then I said, well, you have this other receiver. And the immediate answer was, he won't be there very long. And then all of a sudden, boop, he's cut. Not revealing who that team was, not revealing who that player was. But there are a lot of trade secrets. However, everyone knows the situation, Brady, so you have to either comply, deal with it, or complain. I'm not in that position. I don't have that luxury. I don't have that problem. So it's like I'm the neighbor. Listen, Tom Brady or whomever you are, Ben Johnson, just like my home, you're my neighbor. You seem like you're having a difficult time with a flat tire. I go, hey, you need some help? He says, no, I'm good. Understand, when I hit that button to close my garage, don't you bring your ass across the street and ask me for help. I offered you help one time, and there's no other opportunity after that. And that's what I look at is, look, you know, go ahead and air your grievances. But at the end of the day, you still got to connect the dots and throw the football, and getting a 52-burger on you, don't blame it on Brady.
Sure. And Brady and Ben Johnson have a relationship. If you go back during the playoff game last year where the Lions were losing to the Commanders, there was all this open talk. Remember, Brady was doing that game. Ben Johnson's going to go coach the Raiders at that point. If this is the Lions' final game, right? They had been seen on the field talking before the game. I'm not in any way questioning Tom Brady's integrity. I am talking about the paranoia of NFL head coaches, which you know is deep-rooted in some buildings more than others. Brady is not allowed to be in the building, and he's not allowed to go to practice on Friday. So that rule is already in place. But as you said, it's about the production meetings where the coaches, many of them, just really open up. Now, it's one thing to open up to me. It's another thing to open up to you as an NFL great, as a guy who's going to have a gold jacket one day. Certainly more to you than they would to me or to the broadcaster.
Here's what I have heard and received intel where I've said, is this a trick? Are they testing me to see if I'm a snitch? And there's been some things told me, and I'm like, I do not want any part of that.
Do you think you were being used?
I don't know. I'm pessimistic, Paul. And so I think everybody's out to try to figure out something. So I just try to stay. There's a ton of information that I receive a lot of times in training camps, in these pro days at the combine, that is part of the job. And whomever is doing the job, your integrity and how you do things is based on you. It's not based on the information.
Right. Absolutely. And you always have to ask the question. I know I ask questions to myself. You step back and you go, hey, does it do me any good to repeat this? Like, why would I? Like, no, it gives me actually far less anxiety to not repeat this. I'm going to keep it inside. Like, I can deal with it. I'm not one of these people that needs to go run my mouth. I will be at peace when I keep my mouth shut. That keeps me calm. That's just how I operate. But there are plenty of head coaches, by the way, who I
love.
I know
the gossip. That yes. love the gossip.
Oh, love.
The combine at what's the bar in Indy?
It used to be called Moe's. It's now called you mean the Big Steakhouse.
Yeah,
it's
the Big Steakhouse. Man.
Prime 47.
Man, you at the combine. I've been told some things by coaches with a little bit of refreshing drinks that I'm going, I do not want to know this, coach. I've told a coach, please do not tell me his name. Please do not tell me his name.
Please.
Because I don't want to know.
But just as often they want to hear stuff from you. Hey, what's going on over there? Like, what do you think of that guy?
They'll say about players, but they don't ask me about organizations or teams. I do think I have experienced coaches, general managers, assistant general managers, wide receivers coaches, quarterback coaches, ask me about players. Obviously, ask me a ton about receivers, right? Ask me a little bit about DBs. But I never felt that they would ask me, hey, what's going on in Carolina? Or they may say, hey, what's going on in Carolina? Because you used to be a Panther. And how do you feel about your team? And you live in Charlotte. So that impacts me a little bit differently. But I have never gotten an inquiry or inquiry about a organization from another organization. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, and I totally understand that. The thing that I think, final thought on this, is that there will be plenty of head coaches who say, man, I don't care. I trust myself. I'm just not going to tell him anything. I'm going to give generic answers, and it's fine. It's no big deal. And then there are other coaches who are going to be like, are you kidding
me? A spy. Yeah. Are you
or
a spy?
Like, there is no way I'm putting up with this.
Yes.
But the league has already issued their statement saying, hey, nothing has changed. Tom's allowed to be on headset. Just like, for example, Carly, Jim Irsay's daughter, is allowed to be on headset now as owner in Indianapolis. All owners are. Listen, if Shad Khan wants to put a headset on, he can. If David Tepper wants to put a headset on, he can. If Woody Johnson wants to put a headset on, he can. And no one's going to lose their mind. Obviously, they are not in production meetings with other teams. Hey, want to go real quick here because I know we're short on time. I want to take the four quarterbacks from last night. Give me like a couple of sentences on each one from what you saw. Start off with the winning quarterback in the early game. Baker's 2-0, and he marched him down the field again. What do you think?
You know, I've been very critical of Baker, but I tell you, he's done a remarkable job in Tampa Bay. Everybody you talk to, they say how hard he works, and you can see it. I've had the opportunity to go to training camp several times and seen. And so you just got to call a spade a spade. Baker is performing at a high level. Yes, Baker, just like anybody else, because he's human, has the tendency to turn the football over because the other team gets paid too, right? Yep. They have Pro Bowlers. They have potentially gold jacket types of players, so you can't put it all on Baker. But the grittiness, the toughness that you saw about Baker in Oklahoma, and then you saw him with the Browns, obviously, did not display that here in Carolina, displayed it a little bit with the LA Rams, and then took off when he got to Tampa.
CJ, last night, you worried?
With CJ, we all know what he's worried about, and it's not his game. They have to figure out this offensive line. This offensive line has been a problem. And then you go back and watch the game. When he has time, man, some unbelievable throws. Obviously, some unbelievable catches by the wide receivers. They have some thoroughbreds in the stable at the wide receiver position. And with Schultz at the tight end position, when they run and run the football, they can. But it's tough to always put it on one guy to say when you know that highlight where he's dropping back in the game and he takes a look out of his peripheral and he sees his running back with the blitzer coming. Nowhere in his calculation did he think, well, my running back's going to get stone cold ran over and this blitzer is going to damn near suplex me into the ground. I don't think that was on the menu of things of how it was going to finish.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot there. It's day two. It's the second game in a new system.
Yep.
But still, look, they redid the O-line. The O-line, it's not all working right now. Real quick, in the late game, you know Greg Roman well. What we see, Greg Roman, year two, Justin Herbert, it looks like it's clicking.
Super surprised at the way Greg Roman has been able to evolve his offense because he was run out of town in Baltimore. There were some there was some expectations that weren't fulfilled in Baltimore, and a lot of that pain Greg Roman was part of. And so now you see what he's able to do. I'm not going to say he has a better or less because that's two-time MVP of Lamar Jackson. He's evolved this game, and Justin Herbert, by running the football, being so physical, he's actually become, I think, a pretty efficient and better passing quarterback than people would anticipate because Jim Harbaugh has done a great job, and Jim has always done that, is understanding how to elevate but keep restraints on your quarterback, but make your quarterback such the focal point that this team is unbelievable. And the way the Chargers are going, then Quentin Johnston, former first-round draft pick, who has some struggles last year, his first year. And then he comes back and has a pretty good year, decent year. And then he comes out and he's just balling, firing all cylinders. If you go on the 89 show, I had talked to someone that was coached by Jim Harbaugh, which was Vernon Davis. And he reminds me of a Vernon Davis, like where he can create a mismatch. And then obviously with Quentin Johnston becoming this viable source, that can take away a little bit of the detention that sophomore Ladd McConkey is dealing with of he can't sneak up on anybody anymore. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows he's a baller, right? Yeah. And then you have the old head with Keenan Allen where he comes in and sparingly does some things. So I really love what they're doing. And then at the end of the day, defensively, they got a whole bunch of young guys back there and they're just balling in the front seven is remarkable. So it's pretty typical of a Harbaugh transition. You get a year or two under your belt where you know exactly what you want to do, and then all of a sudden you're firing all cylinders.
Yeah, and Jesse Minter's now in the conversation already for head coach next year because what that defense has done already through not only 1 year last year, but 2 weeks this year. And the final thought on Geno, it's not like you never faced zone before, but when you got Derwin James able to run with a guy down the seam like that, when you have the ability to get after the quarterback and drop that many guys and mix it up like that, that's a deadly combination.
Yeah, Geno has been a quarterback that I think he's remade his career. He sat on the bench and just learned. He's been a student of the game. And when you can have a young man like that who, as he gets older, he doesn't stand up and say, where's my chance? He sits down and he puts his head in his notebook and he gathers up his thoughts and works hard and says, I'm waiting for my opportunity, and has seized the moment. He played very well in Seattle, and then he goes now to match back up with his guy with Pete Carroll and with the Las Vegas Raiders. That's just one of those games where those guys get paid too.
Yep.
And sometimes we want to blame someone. Here's who you blame: the other good team that happened to just beat you on that night.
Yep, that's got Derwin James and is well coached, and it's a division game. They know what they're dealing with, and they're
cousins.
Two.
They know they're cousins. They know what each other are eating, smelling. They know the cologne. They know what he likes, all of that stuff.
Especially those two head coaches. We love you, Steve Smith. The 89 show with our friend James Palmer. It's on Blue Wire. Go check it out. And the golf pod as well, Ironed Out. I'm going to go check out after we hang up. Good to talk to you as always, sir.
No problem.
Hope we do it again soon.
Hey, Andrew, if you want to holler at your boy, you know, just text me. I got you.
I will do that. I appreciate you, my friend.
All right.
All right. All right, great stuff there with Steve Smith. Let's continue the conversation. Hi, I'm Andrew. Jory is here as well. Let's unpack the Bengals a little bit more, because if you look at the calendar, Jory, it's really an issue of, are the Bengals in a position to bring Joe Burrow back at the end of December? Like, can Jake Browning keep them afloat? They have spent a lot of money. If you look at the top four contracts, so the quarterback, the two wide receivers, and Trey Hendrickson, they spend as much, the Bengals are this year, cash on those, on their top four contracts, as any other team in the NFL. Are they built to sustain a winning team through this injury?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because when we go back to what the Bengals were considering contractually in the offseason, the question was, okay, they had the big three. They had receiver Ja'Marr Chase, they had receiver T. Higgins, and they had pass rusher Trey Hendrickson. Could they pay them all? With the idea being, they already paid up for quarterback Joe Burrow, and sometimes when you pay for a quarterback, you end up having to go light, often at something like receiver. Now, not all the time now. We are seeing more Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb with the Cowboys as an example, but we wondered about that. And I sat down with Ja'Marr Chase during training camp, and it was kind of an interesting time to talk to him because Trey Hendrickson at the time didn't have the contract he was holding out. So was their rookie Ja'Marr Stewart. And so I was asking him, and he kind of talked me through all of the emotions about the year that he held in and he didn't have a contract. And he's like, even going into the 2024 season, Ja'Marr Chase kind of had these emotions that he felt like were slowing him the first couple games of the season. And so I said, well, what does it mean now to know that not only do you have the money, but Duke Tobin came out at the combine beforehand and was like, we are going to make this guy the highest non-paid quarterback in the league. What do you think about that? What goes through your mind? And what Ja'Marr told me is he said he thinks that that wasn't necessarily only about him. It was also reflective to him about how valuable the receiver position is and what the receiver means to the game. I mean, I think it feels like just yesterday that Dak Prescott was getting $40 million a year in 2021. And we were all like, $40 million? Like, that's crazy. I mean, remember the first time that a couple years before that we heard the idea of Dak potentially getting 40 a year and everyone thought that was the greediest number and completely unrealistic. And now we have edge rushers getting 40 a year and we have Ja'Marr getting 40 a year. And so this is not to downplay the loss of Joe Burrow, but I think that in today's game with its pass heavy nature, the same way that the quarterback has become increasingly valuable from its already valuable position, receiver has gone up in value, not just cost, as a position too. And thus, it is more valuable for a guy like Jake Browning to have Ja'Marr Chase and also T. Higgins this year than it would have been 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's less the cash and more the percentage of the cap. But with the Bengals, it really is the cash because they haven't spent that cash. I know Bengals fans get angry sometimes. They want to push back. Yes, there have been big ticket items. Orlando Brown, notably, a couple of years ago, his cap number might be high now, but the cash actually isn't high this year because that's all front loaded. But for the most part, they haven't spent that money until they did on Burrow last year, and then Chase, and then Higgins, and then Hendrickson as well. The number, to be exact, I have it here: $141.1 million this year is what the Bengals are spending for Burrow, Chase, Higgins, and Hendrickson. That is 41.3% of the cap. It is by far the highest percentage of total cap to the top four on any roster in the NFL. The average around the NFL is $99.4 million, which is 29.4% of the cap. Bengals are going 41.3%. percent of the cap. And when you lose one of those key pieces, especially your quarterback, well, if you have glaring holes on your roster, they are now going to be exposed. We'll see if Zach Taylor and if Al Golden and if Jake Browning can coach and play around what are perceived as others or by others to potentially be glaring holes. Look, if they beat the Vikings this week and they go to 3-0, they're looking good in the division here. But it's early and it's a long season. it's on Jake Browning to keep this ship afloat. And if it isn't, then Joe Burrow's done for the year. They're not going to bring him back if they're 6-10 in December. No.
I actually think it's interesting, though, Andrew, because when you mentioned that there are four players commanding that percentage of the cap as opposed to one guy commanding whatever it is, 20%,
yeah,
and then there's a huge drop-off, do you think that that means that a team should be able to rebound better because they've got the two receivers and the pass rusher? And none of this is to downplay what Joe Burrow does, because clearly he is, I mean, probably a top four quarterback in the league, especially when he's healthy, and he's maybe only four rather than two because of his health.
The backup quarterback position is, and I think it's more evident now through 2 weeks. I mean, it was certainly evident last year when you had 59 different quarterbacks start games. The backup quarterback is as important a position as there is on the roster in the NFL, period. And if you believe in your backup and you can get him at an affordable price and he can carry you, most coaches will say, hey, if he can get me through a couple of games, we're comfortable with this guy. This is more than that. And I personally would be aggressive and go try to find Kirk Cousins, or would try to make a move. I mean, I know Andy Dalton sounds crazy. They probably think Jake Browning is younger and better, that option, than Andy Dalton. But you have, with that kind of cash spent, a very small window. So just hope that Jake Browning can do it, to me, isn't good enough if I'm a Bengals fan. Because this is another year in which you are spending the money with the sole purpose of winning. And this franchise is not going to do that every year. So I'd spend a little bit more and try to find a way to stay afloat to give Burrow a chance in his, what, year 29 season. That's just me. But they're limited options.
Right. And I think also when you look at it, you say, well, how does Jake Browning compare to other guys in the league? And passer rating is just one number and is not the only number. But when you look at the 98.4 passer rating that he had when he started seven games for the Bengals a couple of years back, that would have ranked 12th last year in the league, right between Jaden Daniels and Jordan Love. So again, that is just one metric. And I'm not suggesting that you would rather have Jake Browning than you would Jordan Love. But I do think it is worth noting that when you consider a Kirk Cousins, a Jameis Winston, like there is a chance that Jake Browning is better than those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though Browning threw a bunch of picks and still rallied them to win this past Sunday, and Jameis Winston is prone to throw a bunch of picks, but he's fun, as I got to see firsthand last year. Also fun, what I like to call our weekly game of the year. Last week, it was the Eagles and the Chiefs, the Super Bowl rematch. This year, it is an NFC division, or this week rather, it is an NFC divisional round rematch with the Rams, who have been quite vocal in saying they're circling week three, visiting the Eagles. 12% of the Eagles' offensive snaps this past week in Kansas City were tush pushes, were the pushes of the tush. 12%. They ran it seven times, including a couple of times that went viral, where clearly the guards were leaving early. Now, last night, Jason Kelce on NFL Countdown and ESPN said, I don't know that the guards are leaving early, although clearly they were. He was blaming Cam Jurgens, the center, for snapping it too slowly. Whatever. It's semantics. Sean McVay was asked about it, and he says, yes, he noticed.
And there's been a clip going around today just where the Eagles look like they're jumping on the tush push. Is that something, when you see something like that, what kind of conversations, if any, do you have preemptively with officials on game day?
Yeah, I mean, anytime that you see certain things, you have conversations with the league office to just make sure you're understanding, how's it officiated? How can we coach it? I did see some of those things last night, and that'll obviously be a big talking point because they're such a damn good team and it's such a successful play for them. So, those are conversations with the league office, but I'm sure they'll have the same ones and operate within the confines of not getting a little bit of a rolling start before the ball is snapped.
I speak Sean McVay. They're such a damn good team, parentheses. They shouldn't be allowed to cheat and be a damn good team. You better believe I'm going to point it out to the officials. The question is, are they going to call it? I would think, Jory, they are going to call it maybe this week more than last because of the fact that this has gotten a lot of a national attention. I think the bigger question is, when the league gets back together, they missed it by only one vote last time in Florida in the spring. Are they going to ban this thing next year?
Well, and Andrew, that's what I think we got to realize is that Sean McVay talking here is not only Sean McVay, the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams, he is also Sean McVay, member of the competition committee in the league. He is one of the people who is taking all of this information and saying, here's what we want to present to the league with proposals for rule changes. When they were having conversations about potentially banning the tush push this offseason, it was, well, what are we going to have the rule revert to? And it was going to be a pre-2004 or so rule that prohibited eliminating all pushing and pulling of the ball carrier. And back then when they were changing the rules, the official said, we can't see this well enough to officiate what's going on, so we need to change this just so we can make sure. And I think that there's this idea that if the official wasn't able to see that, maybe the rule just shouldn't be such that the official can't see it. Or do you want to get sky cams involved? Do you want to get replay assist involved? Like, I think you no longer should be relying on the human officials to catch something like that if you're going to keep the play in the game.
Yeah, I agree. And the point you make there, and we need to be clear here, and I'm glad you pointed that out. It wasn't a, we're going to ban the tush push. It's banning, and this is what it used to be years ago, anyone shoving a ball carrier, right? You can't assist your own runner, whether that is at the line of scrimmage, if it turns into a rugby play, or in the middle of the field. I can't carry my running back if I'm an offensive lineman into the end zone. And that is how, I don't say they tried to get away with this, but that was the umbrella under which there was a movement to ban the play. I've honestly gone back and forth a lot on this. I don't think it looks like a football play. I've talked to plenty of coaches that say, I don't care. Like, if we can't stop it, you know, more power to them. Until somebody can stop it, we should all stop complaining. But when you run it seven times and there are 33 million people watching that game, that shouldn't necessarily factor, but let's just take into account what we saw on Sunday.
It does.
33 million people watching that game on Fox, and you're running it over and over and over, and there's finger pointing, and Gene Steratore says, I'm sick of this now. Like, I give up. It wasn't Gene Steratore, whoever the rule analyst was on that broadcast. It's like it becomes a question of is this good television? Is this a good product? Is this the style of game that we want to sell? And I do think that's part of the conversation, for better or for worse.
Oh, yeah. And when I talked to Jerry Jones at the league meetings, he said he believed that if a team was just so good at a play that it was no longer entertaining to watch this, then that was good enough reason for him to ban it. So I think if there's that element, if there's this doesn't look like football, and if, you, as you said, this is happening repeatedly on a well-watched game, that is what makes a difference. When we saw them add the emergency third quarterback a couple years ago, it was because of it happening in the NFC Championship, not specifically because of the implications of the playoff stakes, but also because they were embarrassed that many people saw that level of quarterback play in the playoffs. Like, that's not what they wanted. And so I do think that if we continue to see the Eagles doing this on the biggest spotlights, and by all accounts, the Eagles are headed back to the playoffs again. I know it's 2 weeks in, but I do think that they seem like they're handling their post-Super Bowl run better than they did a couple years ago. I think we'll continue to see this play, and it would not be surprising if they banned it last year. And as we both know, Andrew, Roger Goodell wants this play out of the game. I don't think that was a very well-kept secret last offseason. And so to me, it was, he tried, he got close, he'll try again. And by the way, if it doesn't happen in March, they'll probably, if he doesn't think he has the votes in March, they'll do what they did this year, which is table it to May when fewer coaches are there, if not any coaches are there, and they have an easier way to pass rules.
What was so interesting is that what Roger wants, Roger generally gets when it comes to these things. And for that not to go through was eye-opening to a lot of people. As for the Niners third quarterback thing, I'm in the minority on that one. I'm fine with the rule change. I don't care. But the Niners mismanaged their roster that week. Okay, they could have had a third quarterback on the roster. They chose not to. They chose not to. And then everyone threw their arms up. Oh, how is this possible? What a horrible product. The Niners mismanaged their roster that week. Period. And we changed the rules because of it.
Yes, because they weren't trying to change the rules to help the team. They were trying to change the rules because the league didn't want teams to have the ability to mismanage the roster and give you that level of quarterback play.
Exactly. All right, real quick here. One last note on Sean McVay. I want to tip the cap to friend of the program, J.B. Long, the voice of the Los Angeles Rams. Often coaches' shows go unnoticed. Monday night, J.B. always does the Sean McVay show. You can see it on the L.A. Rams YouTube, on their social channels. And last night, while all of us were watching Monday Night Football and many people were complaining of a doubleheader, how dare you make me watch 6 hours of football on a Monday night, JB broke injury news.
Let's start with an update on your foot, Coach. How you feeling?
Foot's good. You know, I did tear my plantar fascia, so.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, because now I guess it allows you to heal a little bit faster. But, you know, I was being dramatic, limping around towards the end of the game. But, you know, the MRI confirmed I did that. But good news is I'm not playing, so I'm just on the sidelines watching. So if I have a little cool limp to add some swag, then you'll know why.
It is believed that he got hurt, Sean McVay got hurt, trying to call timeout on a fourth quarter drive that ended with a Blake Corum touchdown. So he's going to tough it out, and he is probable, even though probable is no longer an official injury designation, for the Rams Week 3 game in Philadelphia.
I mean, I think that's so funny. I will agree with Sean that it's better that he tore it all the way, which is what he was suggesting he did. I partially tore mine last summer, and not only did that recovery take a while, but in the attempt to recover it, we screwed up another part of the foot. So we're finally getting back, but the full tear is better, because if not, you're just in this limbo where you're like not hurt enough for you to recover in the way that you need to, and you just need a lot of rest, which I hate rest. But I will say that Mike Vrabel should probably pay attention, because if anyone saw him running on the sideline last week, that man is probably also risking tearing his plantar fascia if he keeps that up.
Yeah, Vrabel gets into it. Like, the Patriots media have seen this already. We saw it last year in Cleveland. He is not afraid to quote unquote put his face in the fan during practice and like get down and dirty and hit people or get hit. Will Campbell, I think, knocked Vrabel down, and didn't he bloody his nose or something like that? Like, Vrabel coaches as if he wants to get hurt.
Yeah, he threw himself into a fight at training camp
multiple times, which led us to the who would win the coaching fight. Like, I thought of it last night, who would win Pete Carroll against Jim Harbaugh. And I'm not suggesting we need old men fighting. But Pete turned 74 yesterday. Happy birthday, Pete. I think the NFL is far better with him than without him. Pete, the day Pete was born, the NFL was 10 days away from kicking off its 32nd season. This is the NFL's 106th season. Just to put everything.
And you know who has been here for almost all of them? Martha Ford, who Dan Campbell gave a game ball to in the locker room this week for her 100th birthday. When he initially said he was giving out a game ball for a birthday, I'm like, what, you turn 24 and you get celebrated now for participation? No, 100 years and that much Lions football. She deserved at least one game ball. Like, good for her. That was awesome.
And Marv Levy just turned 100 as well back in August. And he was there in the Hall of Fame in Canton this year as well. Marv Levy, happy 100, a belated happy 100, another one of my favorite people in the NFL. Still living the great life on Lakeshore Drive, as are we. That is Jory. My name is Andrew. We are here every Monday through Thursday for Inside Coverage. Charles Robinson, part of the program. Frank Schwab, part of the program. They returned later this week. We thank you for listening, watching, sharing, and subscribing. So long, buddy.